kayo'y nakikinig sa SBS Filipino. Pakinggan niyo pa ang kwento sa sbs.com.au/filipino.
Kwentong First Nations, pagsalaysay ng kanilang nakaraan at karanasan.
With me today, here in the studio, is Bianca Easton, and we are going to talk about First Nations stories.
Hi, my name is Bianca Easton. I'm a proud Bunurong woman from the Kulin Nation. I also have other Aboriginal ancestry, which we haven't been able to track to which area that was from, like a lot of people in Victoria.
So you grew up here in Victoria?
Yeah, I grew up in around on Bunurong country, so around Port Phillip Bay for most of my life.
Beautiful place.
Yeah, it is. It's a beautiful country, yeah.
Bianca, we were talking earlier about the significance of the elders in the lives of the First Nations people.
Yep.
Can you tell us what in specific is the role of the elder?
So traditionally, we didn't have written language. So all of our knowledge, scientific legacy, Dreamtime stories were all passed down verbally, and the elders were the ultimate knowledge holders. They're the ones who repeated the stories so that the community learnt them. They're the cultural advisors and the people that would, just say for a loose term, would be more like the government. They'd be the people who would advise on law and make decisions for your clan, and what, you know, what's appropriate behaviour, what's not, interacting with other First Nations communities in nearby land.
So when you talk about law, is it the same law for every community, or there's a specific
There's over 500 different, like there's around 500 different communities in Australia. So no, there's different dreaming stories in Victoria compared to up north, and different cultures, different areas have their own creation stories, their own laws. Generally, all laws generally come back to not harming the environment, people, animals, only taking what you need. Basically, in nowadays term, living sustainably and with country. Yeah, not taking too much and using everything.
How do you become an elder?
Elders are kind of appointed by the community. It's not an official ceremony or election or anything like that. But they're the respected members of community who hold knowledge and work hard, you know, for the rights of our people nowadays. Yeah. There's families where there would be influential families who would always, you know, have a lot of knowledge, but that doesn't mean that you can become an elder if you weren't. It's more about how your community respects and sees you, and your knowledge base as well. Yeah.
So it's like being the chosen.
It's kind of like in normal families, how you'd have your, just say you had a couple of grandparents or cousins or whatever, and you'd have the ones who are kind of dedicated to family and hold the family history and are responsible and great people, and they're the people that you go to for advice or whatever. That's kind of the same thing in our communities.
And they are the people that you run to for advice in a personal and in a community base.
Yeah, and in a cultural, for example, my daughter's dad's group has an elder who culturally oversees it. We have First Nations dance teachers, but she is the one that would advise on, any major sort of decisions and make sure that the girls were acting appropriately. Yeah.
So there are elders for different sets of topics or?
No, there's kind of just general.
General.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's different elders. Like if you think of Uncle Jack Charles, he was very prominent in theatre, performing arts, that sort of thing. Auntie Carolyn Briggs has done a lot to research and bring back our stories and history. Yeah, and are very influential, in the community.
And you mentioned earlier that previously you never had written history, you never wrote anything?
No. Pre-colonization, we didn't have written language. Everything was communicated through art, story, and taught practically. Like, my grandma always told me to watch and learn. You had to watch and learn, and then you'd slowly, you know, learn as you grow. Yeah.
You didn't have grades back then.
No, you wouldn't have grades. You wouldn't have, you know, you'd have people.
Report cards and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you mentioned a very interesting aspect of how you recorded your history through a cloak.
Yeah. So in the Kulin Nation in Victoria, we had possum skin cloaks. They were used practically to keep us warm and dry. They were waterproof, sustainable. When a baby was born, they'd receive a couple of pelts or a pelt that would wrap the baby, and on the reverse side, it would either be painted on your family's story, or it would be burnt into the skin. And as you got older and had different significant, you know, moments in your life, that would be added to the cloak until it was probably the size of just, say, like a bed cover. It would wrap
quilt,
an adult,
yeah,
and then that would be buried with you. So
why a possum?
Possums were sustainable. They were locally sourced. They were on our land and practical.
So the material of the cloak would vary in different
communities. Within different parts of the country. So there's, I don't know the exact practices further north, but I know that kangaroo skins are also worn where we use possum skins down here. Yeah.
So a cloak would never be a fabric?
Not in the it's difficult because yes, you'd use it to wear, or to sleep under, or rolled up as, you know, to sleep on, but it's not in the same way that clothes were cut and made abroad. Yeah.
And you said it was lost for a period
of time. Yeah, the practice with the stolen generation, which was the forced removal of Aboriginal children from their families in Victoria, that practice was lost. And in the early 90s, one of the museums in Victoria contacted elders from the communities to come in and showed them the cloaks from their ancestors so that the practice could be brought back again. Yeah.
And you mentioned that you were doing this practice with your daughter.
Yeah, with my children, yes. They only have small cloaks at the moment, but it will grow with them when their story and other people, yeah, do the practice as well.
So you add to the cloak when significant events happen to one's
life. Yeah. It's not like birthdays or things like that. It's more
milestones?
Yeah, kind of milestones. Yeah, family history or significant family events, that sort of thing.
Do you have one?
I don't have a full one. I was born before then, but I am starting to rebuild my history on a cloak so that I will have one.
How important is that?
I think it's important to bring back the practice. I think it's just how, just say, European people would make like traditional quilts or other heirloom practices. It's special.
You like, you share, or comment. Sundan SBS Filipino sa Facebook.